Hi everyone, this is Alan Morrison for Data Science Central here. I was excited to get the chance in July to talk with David Linthicum, the former Chief Cloud Strategy Officer at Deloitte. I wanted to make sure that you had access to the full conversation because we really covered a lot of ground in a short period of time, and David just made a lot of very telling points about the obstacles most enterprises who aren't in big tech face when it comes to making the most of generative AI. So here, without further ado, is my conversation with David Linthicum. Yeah, I was just wondering about your impression of how GAI is being done right now and how it could be done differently from an architect's perspective. Can we sort of paint a picture of a context of a better scenario for the development of AI in general and how enterprises should be doing things differently?
Yeah, it's a great question. Everybody seems to be marching in the same hype-driven pace right now to the same targets. In other words, to GPUs, CUDA, and it has to, a lot of people are seeing, I'm seeing RFPs that are coming out with just the NVIDIA framework that they just released, their reference architecture. And that's not necessarily the way it should be done. So ultimately, I think that businesses are going to find that their uses of generative AI are going to be more strategically focused. They're going to be small language models. They're going to be tactical systems. They're not necessarily going to be building LLMs. So this idea that the tire manufacturers in the world and the airlines in the world and the automobile manufacturers in the world are going to be building ChatGPT in their firewall is absolutely nonsensical. That's not the way it's going to bear out. And they may be leveraging LLMs. And certainly that's fine. There's going to be lots of companies that make a lot of money in selling industry specific LLMs and, competitors to ChatGPT, and some of the big players are doing that right now. But the use of AI as a legitimate business solution is going to be something very different than what people are imagining now. And I'm seeing this bear out as I'm doing consulting with folks that are working on architectures and teaching people how to do architectures. It's a huge dichotomy, a huge chasm between what the industry is telling them and what the media is telling people, and then what's actually going to be playing out behind the scenes in terms of leveraging these architectures. So when I see movement to CUDA and movement to NVIDIA, things like that, it's more of a knee-jerk reaction. It's the buying of architecture, the buying of frameworks, and in essence, kind of moving forward with the idea and the concept that it provides without understanding how they're going to be leveraged in particular use cases. So we're at this, and we went through this in the whole cloud computing mix back in 2011 through 2013. People knew they wanted cloud. There were some reference architectures out there. Everybody started moving in a knee-jerk way to AWS. And in some instances, it made sense. In some instances, it didn't. When they got to the end of the day, they needed much more tactically focused and bespoke architectures to make this happen. And I think the same thing with generative AI in a larger degree. These things are hugely expensive. These things cost 5 to 10 times as much to build and to power. So these aren't inconsequential business decisions that people are making. And I think when you get right down to it, a lot of businesses are going to get very smart very quickly in using these things in much less hype-driven ways, strategic ways than people are defining it now. So I think the usage of it is going to be more along the lines of lots of different processors and open frameworks, and certainly CUDA and NVIDIA are going to be part of the mix, but the market's going to normalize them with everybody else, and they're going to be another tactical player in a larger pool of market players right now. So they're enjoying a hype-driven stuff, and they're to be congratulated for it. They have the right technology at the right time at the right hype train. They're playing the game they need to play to get into the space, but ultimately it's going to be a much more crowded, much more normalized marketplace.
That sounds promising. And I'm wondering, the smaller language models that you're speaking about, do we have examples to emulate, models to emulate on how to do that in a good way? What are you seeing out there in terms of the smaller language models and how enterprises are taking advantage of them?
Yeah, I mean, things like agentic AI, which is agent-based AI, mm-hmm. where you have different intelligent agents that are operating in parallel in a distributed way within these environments. That's a good application of it. But it's things like supply chain integration, where you're dealing with a very finite data set. In other words, your logistics information, your sales information, your inventory information, and you're using that to train a small language model to make very tactical decisions in terms of how to best deploy your trucking environment and best logistics ways, best path of those trucks to take through the United States, the ability to find the cheapest gas, the ability to deal with weather anomalies. See, those sorts of things are real live business decisions that people deal with on a daily basis. They're not going to necessarily leverage this stuff as something that's going to be looking at the holistic aspect of all their data, because chances are they don't know where their data is to begin with, so that it can use tactical pools of data to train a model that's going to have a huge amounts of strategic advantages initially when they're foray into AI. It's going to be building up with these very small business models. They're going to be CPU based. They're going to be mobile, leveraging agentic AI, leverage small language models. They're going to be very tactically focused. And those are the ways that businesses are going to get a foray into generative AI. They're not going to build LLMs. So this notion that most of them aren't going to build LLMs, the dumb ones will. So this notion that businesses are going to put all their assets into generative AI systems that are LLM based is just not going to happen. They can't afford it. They can't power it. It doesn't make sense for them. And you look at the surveys we're seeing now, the CIOs can't find the use cases for it yet. They don't know. They haven't got a control over their data yet. They haven't cataloged what their data means. Unless they do that, they have no way of training these various systems. You have to understand the source of data, and you have to understand what the data means before you can train these systems to have some sort of advantage to the business. And so you have lots of barriers that are between them and leveraging generative AI for these very huge strategic advantages. It's going to take years, not months. Who cares about GPUs? There's lots of other decisions and lots of other harder things that have to be made in terms of understanding your data, understanding your use cases, understanding your business benefits, and the ability to get your talent and team in place to get your architectures and your solutions built are going to eventually bring value back to the business. I think it's going to take at least a year or 2 years for many organizations to build their talent up to make these things happen, to get the generative AI architects in place, the data scientists, the AI engineers, the people that have to do the hard, heavy lifting to build these things. They don't have them on staff now. And so you can certainly go out to the consulting firms to do it, but they're dealing with the same thing. They're having trouble hiring the AI talent and so they're having to build them in place, and it's going to take them a couple of years to build and train these people. They're going to be able to go off and pull these things off. So there's a huge barrier between what everybody thinks is happening versus what it can happen, what can realistically happen. So what we're going to see is we're seeing growth in the hype now. People are doing the proof of concept prototypes. That's where we're seeing the uprising in cloud providers. We're seeing huge interest in GPUs. People are panic buying those things without necessarily rhyme or reason. They're buying them ahead of demand. The cloud providers are certainly scaling up with them because they see a huge use case for GPUs and other advanced AI features moving forward. But they're going to find that the rolling out within the business is going to be a bit more methodical and a bit more slower going. It's going to take 5 years to do what they think is going to take a year. And so that's just the reality of it. And that's the way enterprises adopt technology. They're limited by the limitations. They don't have an unlimited budget. They can't spend the money. And these things are hugely expensive. I don't see them paying for it. and many instances they just don't have the budget to make it happen. And the big thing, which is the biggest barrier, they may desire to build these generative AI systems to change their business. They can't find the talent they need to make it happen, even from the consulting companies that they're hiring. So all that bear in mind, we have the technology providers that are very into defining what the market is. We have the cloud providers are very into defining what the market is. We have the enterprises that have no clue in terms of how to build those systems. They're waiting for the enterprises to spend the money to make the market move forward. And that's not happening. And I think that's it's just going to be a little bit slower going than people originally think. That doesn't mean it's not going to have a huger, larger impact, but it's very much like the adoption of cloud computing. Everybody thought cloud was everybody's going to be on the public cloud provider, and by 2015, I remember seeing those predictions. No way in hell it was going to happen. It's just too fast for enterprises to move, even if they wanted to get there. And so it's even slower going with this because the amount of change, the amount of cost that has to go into it. And so everybody gets into these, you know, reference architectures, GPUs, Intel, you know, making, you know, the CUDA is a lock-in platform, which it is. It's locking people into a particular way of doing something. But at the end of the day, the market's going to normalize whatever, however it normalizes. Intel's going to get into the market with probably a functional chip. So is AMD. They're going to create an open source framework that's going to be competitive to CUDA. Who cares? And people are going to use whatever frameworks are. If you want to get into a dumb discussion now, it's going to be, CUDA versus whatever open source framework is going to exist that's going to compete with it. And that's going to happen. So the perception of what the market is versus what it really is and how people are going to spend, the patterns of spending, is completely different now than what I think even the vendors see and the cloud providers.
You mentioned the difficulties with just struggling with enterprise data. And it seems like that is a key obstacle for trying to do more with AI inside the enterprise. Do you think AI trends are encouraging better data management, or are we still sort of locked into the same situation we've been in?
It's got to encourage better data management because they got to understand, they got to have a single source of truth. They have to have an understanding of the meaning of the data. They have to kind of figure out how the data is going to break out of the siloed data infrastructure they currently have. And I mean, I wrote books on this with old EAI stuff. And unless that occurs, they're not going to be able to get at the training data that's going to be meaningful for the AI systems to learn. And you got to remember, it's not just a single data set. It's going to have to be sales data with inventory data, with logistics data, with supply chain integration data, with sales order entry system data that's going to be outside the confines of the firewall that we're using, social media data, and the ability to communicate with LLMs, and your ability to bring all this stuff into some sort of a tactical understanding that you're going to be able to leverage as some sort of a meaningful use case. And so unless you're able to go out and get that data that's going to be leveraged as training data, I wrote about this in InfraWorld a while ago. I said your generative AI system is stupid because your data is stupid. In other words, it's only as good as the information that comes in. And so I don't see a lot of enterprises breaking out of getting into the, and I see a lot of enterprises not having a good handle on the data right now. They're going to have to solve that problem first before they make their generative AI systems work, or else they're going to build a lot of other tactical solutions that aren't necessarily going to be able to generate a lot of value. And again, you're going to be limited by your ability to build generative AI systems because you're only going to have access to three different data sets out there where you need access to 50. And that's because we can't get access to them. They're siloed system. They aren't integrated. They have bad data hygiene. We don't know the meaning of the data. We have to have a semantic understanding of that. And that just doesn't exist right now. So we're getting into this fantasy that this AI system is going to automagically fix the back-end system. The AI system is only going to be used if the data is fixed before it's absorbed into it, before it's absorbed into its training data. So it's either or. Either you fix your data, or either you fix your data, or your AI system is going to be worthless. It's just not going to be able. It's not going to. It's erroneous information, hallucinations, all the stuff that's going to come into with the bad information. I suspect some of that may go on. I'm seeing some of that now, But enterprises are seeing that they have to go fix the backend systems. And of doing that, that's a huge problem to solve that they've been kicking down the road for many years with a lot of technical debt that's been built. Their data scattered in public cloud providers and on-premise. It's not well integrated. They have no data abstraction layers. There's not a common semantic understanding. Many single sources of the truth within the system. And the older the companies are, the more they're going to have likely have these data problems. And those have to be fixed to get access to the strategic use of data. You can get tactical use of data just by using a single data set to train a small language model. But what they're looking to build and how to get their value out of a generative AI system, it's going to need access to all of the data and holistically and the ability to have a common understanding of what that is. And the enterprises just aren't there yet, generally speaking.
Understood, and that makes sense. One of your pieces talked about the vulnerabilities, the cybersecurity threats that are emerging with this type of AI. And I think that there's a new class of threat, as I understand it, when it comes to GAI in terms of querying the model and then inferring from the results that you're getting. Can you sort of describe more about that kind of threat and what should enterprises be doing about that kind of thing?
Yeah, it's poisoning the model. And it is the ability to have another dimension of security. So they're used to just protecting data. They encrypt it. They put firewall protections upon it, identity access management, things like that. But if they're giving human beings and machines access to an inference engine, which is communicating with their AI system, you can do all kinds of fun stuff like actually introduce logic or introduce knowledge where every Thursday I want you to send me a check for $25,000. And if there's no protections in there for those sorts of shenanigans going on, then that's exactly what they're going to do, because those things are designed to learn bidirectionally from the chat information that comes in. And we have to be able to put information in to get information out and update the systems, you know, dynamically. And if we're providing open access either internally or even to customers, then those vulnerabilities are going to be there. So you have to put those protections in place to make sure that no malicious logic, no malicious knowledge can get into the system. And most of them that I see, they don't even know that. And so when I walked around the RSA conference a couple of months ago, I was questioning the vendors about that. Do you know about, you know, AI poisoning? And everybody was promoting their generative AI or their AI security capabilities. And no one really could understand that. They could certainly protect access to the data. So in other words, they can prevent me from getting into the chat engine. But the thing is, if you're going to open up these chat engines and these APIs to the public, then you're going to be exposed to all kinds of these kinds of malicious opportunities where people are able to do this kind of stuff. The other thing is weaponizing, you know, other LLMs and the ability to communicate with your small language model or your LLM that you've built to, you know, answer like, you know, flight questions if you're running an airline, and the ability to finally break into these systems to have disjointed attack vectors that are coming in with different angles that aren't really thought of by the people who are deploying these models. And we don't normally see these attacks occurring because they're not raising up too much of suspicion in terms of processing thing. They're not doing multiple attacks. They're just trying things in ways that a human being would actually interact with the system. So all these metrics that we've dealt with cybersecurity and understanding how attacks occur and the ability to, you know, look at attacks coming in on a particular single IP address and all these kind of things, those aren't working anymore. People are going to weaponize AI against AI, and your ability to break into these systems. And these people that are weaponizing this stuff, these bad actors, they're typically smarter than the people who are protecting it. And so we have a lot of cybersecurity experts out there that have no idea how to protect the AI systems. Unfortunately, not a lot of them are built yet within the enterprises. So they don't have anything to worry about because nothing's there to protect. But when they start exposing these things, then that's where we're going to get a very quick lesson in the fact that you have to build these protections from these vulnerabilities inside the knowledge engine themselves, which is something that people just aren't thinking about yet.
Well, And the more sophisticated security experts that I know, they know a lot about data. They know a lot about the data layer. And I think that the data management and security are going to be coming together in ways that we haven't even thought of. Is that your impression?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think that it is not siloing security anymore, but the ability to deal with complexity on complexity's terms. And so your ability to deal with security abstraction, you know, very sophisticated security managers that are operating across different, you know, different security patterns, identity access management, encryption, all that stuff is combined with some sort of security observability layer that's able to, in essence, get at something systemically and get at complexity systemically, because that's what we're dealing with now. The vulnerabilities are coming from the complexity. We have heterogeneity out there, you know, 50 different databases, 50 different platforms, 50 different cloud systems. And the ability to protect that is just almost an impossibility than it was even 10 years ago. So, you know, my advice is to deal with complexity on complexity's terms and look at security abstraction layers, security managers, the ability to automate systems, things like that. There's not a lot of tools out there that work in those domains, but that's the only way you're going to be able to do it, you know, or else you're just going to have to hire more people and buy more technology. And that's where we kind of run into the problem. We're trying to spend the same amount of money on cybersecurity we did 10 years ago, where the complexity has quadrupled, and not necessarily having the tools and the talent to go ahead and take care of the complexity.
Do you think that enterprises are going to be taking on more of the responsibility and the burden of their own systems rather than trusting third parties for a good portion of it? It just seems like the amount of complexity that exists today and the need for insightful architecture and to adhere to these kinds of principles, it just seems like if you don't have your own house in order, how can you pay other people to do something for you? That's sort of the question I have.
Are you talking about managed service providers, cloud providers, or consulting?
I'm talking about how much is in-house in an enterprise, and how much expertise do you have to be able to make sure your systems are doing what they're supposed to be doing?
Right. Yeah, I think that is going to be in-house. I think that the notion that we're going to push everything out to a public cloud provider and therefore outsource the risk and the management capability with that was just a pipe dream. And suddenly we realize that everything's not going to exist in a centralized cloud provider. Normally, if we're leveraging cloud providers, it's multiple clouds. In other words, we're leveraging the systems in a more tactical capabilities. But also a lot of things are being brought back on premise. And the reason for is costs. The cloud stuff just got too costly, you know, based on what we got, does not provide any additional security advantages. So people just look to run them back on premise. And therefore, you have to build the talent and the infrastructure internally. And by the way, it's always been that way. Cloud providers have a shared responsibility model. They're going to provide you with mechanisms and capabilities, but in essence, what they are is a big data center where everything exists as a service. And even though we don't see it, it still belongs to us. We still have to secure it using our technology in a certain way. Secure it using their technology, but our responsibility to make it happen. So I think enterprises have seen that, and they're kind of bringing everything back in-house. And even though it's in a distributed way, it's going to run in the cloud, run on managed service providers, co-location providers, maybe their enterprise data center, mobile computing, edge computing, you know, run on my wristwatch. They're still responsible for security. And at the end of the day, they have to take the responsibility they're in their own under their hat. And they're going to have to do it themselves. If they start outsourcing it to, you know, different managed service providers, things like that, they're just going to solve small parts of the problem. They're not going to solve holistically what they're able to do. They can't run everything on Amazon. They can't run everything in Microsoft. They can't run everything on a managed service provider. it's going to be an eclectic array of platforms that they have to secure in different ways. And again, it's dealing with heterogeneity and deal with the complexity of it. That's on them. You can't outsource that. You can certainly pass it off to a consulting organization, but you're just paying somebody to do the work that you would be. It's still your responsibility. They're in essence your agent. You're just leveraging them as a body shop.
Yeah, just interesting thoughts today. It seems like as long as I've been reading your articles, we've had this issue of the magic bullet, GAI has been the magic bullet recently. You mentioned the RSA conference. It sounded like the RSA conference I went to like 20 years ago. I mean, in terms of, there hasn't been a lot of change in terms of how these dynamics are happening in some ways. I mean, we're fighting the same problems we were in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I'd say it's even gotten worse. We've gone off in different directions. We expanded the use of technology, which is a good thing because there's value in doing that. But in doing so, we expanded complexities, expanded heterogeneity. We're not doing things using a single platform. And I think we realized that that's never going to happen. And so we probably should have realized that back in the advent of cloud computing and understanding the role that cloud computing would play. I heard so many people, you know, tell me about their cloud only strategy and they're going to be in the cloud in 5 years and shutting down the data center and all this kind of stuff. And that was never going to happen. And so if they would have put their money and time into planning for that eventuality, planning to the fact they're going to have to deal with complex heterogeneous systems and therefore invest in abstraction and invest in observability, invest in common security mechanisms and looking at common architectural standards. So you were doing things in kind of a sane way, you know, we'd be much further along. And everybody is just basically doing the whole distracted shiny object thing. And now it's done with AI. And I think it's just going to become another silo we're going to have to leverage. I think it's going to have vast benefits for many businesses out there, the ones who know how to embrace it. Yeah. But there's few organizations out there that know how to do that. For some companies, it's going to be an innovative differentiator that's going to be building their business. They're going to have some sort of an automated supply chain, some sort of production management system that's powered by AI that's able to do things 20% better than the competition, therefore sell things cheaper, sell things at better quality, provide a better customer experience. And they're going to leverage that as a force multiplier that's going to get them further along in the business. But those are going to be few and far between. Most enterprises are going to struggle with leveraging the technology to some sort of strategic advantage. And there seems to be a huge disparity between it kind of what the press is saying and the poor CIO that's, you know, some tire company in Akron, Ohio, that's charged with continuing to automate their business and has their board of directors breathing down their necks because they want to figure out how generative AI is going to change their business. And I have conversations with those people all the time. And I think that rank and file is basically the consumers of the technology that are making a difference. And they're trying to figure out how to leverage this technology to some sort of advantage and how to get the talent they need to try to solve a lot of hard problems that, quite frankly, are not easy to solve and are going to take a long time to solve.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, my response to it is trying to build a vast array of generative AI architects that know how to pragmatically approach the problem and work with these folks to, you know, build these systems. But unfortunately, I think it's just the touch the stove thing that people need to do. They had to touch the stove with cloud. So 2022 was everybody calling me saying, my cloud bill is $1 million. We thought it was going to be $100,000. I said, I never told you it's going to be $100,000. I told you it was going to be $1 million. I said, well, the cloud provider said it's going to be $100,000. And I said, well, I mean, they're selling services. And everybody ported under-optimized systems out in the cloud, and those things ate a bunch of resources, cost them a lot of money, and now everybody's pushing them back on-premise with the repatriation movements going on. So I think we're going to have to touch the stove with the AI stuff. Unfortunately, it's a more expensive stove. It's going to hurt the business more, and hopefully people are going to, you know, wise up before they do it. And you know, some of the hype that's going, some of the stuff with the cloud providers and some of the early adoption that's going on is probably not a good indication of how we're going to consume the technology. So yeah. It's, and I think the vendors, NVIDIA included, need to get their ducks in a row and figure out how to simplify usage of this technology and what needs to happen within the enterprises to make these things successful. And I don't think we're focused on that right now. We're just focused on the shiny objects. We're focused on ChatGPT. We're focused on eliminating jobs and some of the advantages that it has. And it's cool to focus on that. But the heavy lifting needs to occur to make it happen, needs to really happen before we can make that value occur.
Yeah. We'll leave it there. I appreciate the information so much. And I will be back in touch once I have something up.
Thanks, everyone, for taking a listen to this conversation with David Linthicum. He's a very prolific author. You can find his posts on InfoWorld and follow him on LinkedIn. Hope to see you next time when we interview another insightful guest.